All right, ready to go?
Yeah, let's go. We couldn't get it. We couldn't get a cold open without Jeff here.
Slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime.
What's up, Hoodat Nation? Thanks for joining us on the Dope Patrol Podcast. I'm your host, Jason. Not Jeff this week. Jeff is at his mini camp on the beach this week. Practicing, getting ready for his 2015 podcasting season. So I'm going to take over hosting duties tonight. Hopefully I don't shit the bed, but I'm going to start off by saying my level's probably at 2.2. Nothing major. Wasn't really planning to do a show tonight. Thought we were going to have a guest. Didn't work out. He might still join us later if he can figure out Skype. But we're officially in the dead zone now. It's July 1st. As much as you thought the earlier part of the offseason was the dead zone, no, this is the dead zone. You got no football for a month. You got no basketball. You got no hockey for all you hockey fans out there. All you've got is baseball right now. You got a little golf, a little tennis. But it is the dead zone. And not only that, there's no news. And maybe it's a good thing with all the Junior Gallette news over the last few weeks that he didn't do anything stupid this week and we don't have anything to talk about for him. So we'll talk. There's a couple of NFL and sports headlines, some Big Pels news this week, and then we're going to introduce a little segment, talk about one of the all-time great Saint seasons in history and just the kind of status of the franchise moving forward. So, shit, I'm trying to think of what Jeff says. Put your seatbelts on, strap yourselves in, put your hands and legs inside the car, and remain seated at all times. I know I fucked that up big time, but we're going to go anyway. Damon is on the show tonight. What's going on? I'm assuming a zero.
That is correct, sir.
As is, of course, the tradition.
It's just going to be so nice. You know, fans, listen, the IQ points for this podcast are going to be much higher than you're used to.
Oh.
Without Jeff here, you know.
Hey, look, I'll be honest. I definitely appreciate and understand how hard it is to steer a show. I don't like moderating the show. I get a lot of uzz, and I don't, you know, when I go back and listen to it, I'm just disappointed. So it's hard to steer a show. So I definitely miss Jeff in that aspect. Because when I come on, I don't have to worry about that shit.
Oh, no doubt.
You got the agenda, he steers it, I don't have to worry about shit. Now I have to worry about what we're going to talk about, steering the conversation.
No, you're right, and he does a very good job of hosting. Anytime I put someone new on the podcast, I've had several different people say that Jeff really does a good job at moderating. I'm just talking about his comments, not so much his moderating skills. Those are fine. But, you know, he doesn't know much about really football or anything. I'm not sure what he is.
He knows some Saints.
He does. He has some good stuff that has wound up on the cutting room floor. I wish we would have kept it.
No, so smartly we don't. Look, there's a lot of myself. There's a lot of my drunken self that I cut on the floor, and I'm glad I have that power to do it.
Right.
Because man, that sounds fucking stupid.
Right. Well, God forbid if I ever learn to edit. And then I attack y'all too. Then it would all become we'd attack one another in the editing room.
Oh,
that would be fun.
That's going to be like our 300th clip show. It's just going to be you saving all these clips.
Right.
So anyway, again, not a lot of Saints news to talk about, really. You know, they broke minicamp. No major injuries. Really, it's just a holding pattern now until camp starts at the end of the month.
No, and, you know, and you just said with no injuries. How nice is that? This year, where we didn't have a lot of people in the off season nursing injuries, Remember Jarius Byrd last year had surgery.
Yeah, he hadn't even practiced yet because of his back.
Right. You know, and there were just a lot of people just nicked up. And so,
and even coming off major injury. I mean, Vaccaro was coming off, you know.
Oh, his broken foot. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, his broken ankle.
That's right. So that in it of itself is just nice because, look, winning a lot of games, and we've said it, you've heard it before, injuries play a part in it, and luck with injuries plays a huge part in it.
Yeah, big time.
So that is one good thing. I'm getting excited. Every article I read, there was a good article on who was the linebacker? I can't.
Anthony?
Anthony.
Are you talking about the one on The Advocate?
Yes.
Yeah, I read it the other day, too.
Right. Everybody's blowing him and saying what a good job he's doing. He's picking things up quick. So having a middle linebacker will definitely help this team out, I'll tell you. And I like Curtis Lofton, but he made a lot of tackles, but he just wasn't special. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, he was a leader, but he wasn't spectacular. I mean, he wasn't a difference maker at all.
Right. Right. And I went back and watched a couple of games. I forget why or how. It must have been NFL Network. A couple of the Saints games when we had Vilma. And again, it was the second Atlanta game, which was the last game we had won in the regular season in 2009.
The one where he stopped him.
Right. Stopped him on fourth down.
Yeah.
And he intercepted the ball. Just, we really, because it's not a sexy position like quarterback or wide receiver or running back, you know. But Jonathan Vilma was a huge, huge part of that Super Bowl run. It's not a sexy position like that year, our cornerbacks and our safeties, who shall not be mentioned,
yeah,
you know, getting those interceptions and getting pick sixes. And again, that's a sexy play, a pick six, you know?
Of course, one of the biggest plays in football.
No doubt. But and Jonathan Vilma was just smart player, making the right stops at the right time. I can't say enough. I appreciate him now more that he's gone than I did when he was here, unfortunately.
I mean, I remember when we traded for him, I was like, this is unbelievable that the Jets are willing to give up a guy like this. And look, it's why I've said I think he belongs in the Ring of Honor. I think that's how good he was, how important he was.
I agree. That we will agree on. that we will definitely agree on.
I think I might have said he deserves to be in before Bobby. I'm pretty sure that I might agree on also.
Because he really was a spectacular player. He didn't get his due. If any of y'all fans remember, and again now, I don't know. I don't remember when he came into the league. Probably 2005, 2006,
like 2004.
Four,
maybe.
Okay, right around that time. You know, he was Defensive Player of the Year with the Jets, and of course he got a lot of publicity and everything being in the great big New York market. Then Man Genius came in and switched their defensive scheme from a
4-3 to a 3-4, and he didn't fit.
Right, and he didn't fit. And so, you know, his stock kind of fell. And I think we got him for, I think, a fourth rounder.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that much.
Cheap. And here's a guy who, you know, 3 years, 4 years earlier was defensive rookie of the year,
yeah.
Right, pro bowler. I mean, the man had the skin on the wall. Again, it just shows you, man, how much you just have to, things have to fall into place to win a Super Bowl and to get these great players. And we were so lucky to get him for cheap.
Right, for peanuts, really.
Right.
I mean, when you think about how important he was to the team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was the best player on defense.
Even, you know, right when he came in, when we traded him for him in the 08 season, I mean, you could just tell right away. Like, even though our defense still wasn't good because we had fucking Case Fahorn in the back, you could just tell there was a difference when we got him and we had him.
You're right. Well, again, like I said, that if y'all get a chance, it's on YouTube, that Atlanta game. Again, watch that game. Just go, you know, fast forward through it and watch the highlights. To have a player like that, again, making plays and making the smart decisions. And I've always said this. Look, one of the biggest plays he made, you go back to the Super Bowl, the right before Peyton Manning threw that pick six to Tracy Porter, they ran a play with the tight end to the goal line, and it was Jonathan Vilma right there with him, stride for stride.
Who tipped it away?
Who tipped that ball away.
Oh, know? That's right. You're right.
Biggest play in the Super Bowl. I mean, not big. I guess not biggest because it's.
But, I mean, one of.
But right, right. Top five, top ten. You know, if he doesn't make that stop, who knows what happens. I mean, it's a tie game. We know that much. But we don't have to worry about that because Jonathan Vilma was there. I don't really.
Oh, you're right. God, that's really a forgotten play that I don't
know. It is. People do not mention that play. That play is huge.
Huh. You know, I'm going to have to go back. I have a Blu-ray with the three, you know, the two playoff games, Super Bowl and the Redskins game from that season, like the full game broadcast. I need to go back and – because, I mean, I've watched, you know, rewatched the Super Bowl, but not really like the full game. I'll watch like the hour and a half recap from NFL Network. So they show a lot of the plays. But
right, not all of them.
So, yeah.
Well, like everything, like rewatching that Atlanta game, we forget how close some games were. Again, that Atlanta game, we won about 3 points. And quite honestly, we might not even should have won that game. We all tend to remember the Detroit game where we just beat the stew out of Detroit.
Even Giants, Patriots.
Right.
Big games, but I mean, we barely squeaked by the Rams. Remember
yes.
that game?
Yes.
It won for Courtney Roby's return.
Courtney Roby returned in the second half. Yeah, that game we – the Rams just have our number.
Yeah, it's especially like in St. Louis.
Right. It's just insane.
St. Louis. All right, so anyway, enough reminiscing about 2009. We got a little segment later where we're going to reminisce about another team. So we'll get into a little bit of headlines.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Springfield.
Got two headlines. Surprise, you know, really not a lot of, even not only just Saints news, even NFL news, nothing too crazy, but the one topic that's been floating around is Russell Wilson, and we're going around him and his agent want the richest contract ever for a quarterback, $25 million a year. That number's been floating around, and you know, Seattle seems not really balking, but just kind of like, look, we'll ride you out this year, and we'll deal with it later. I guess if they have to franchise him, they could franchise him for a year. But I just don't – look, Wilson's a good quarterback. I mean, is he worth more than Rodgers and Breeze and Brady and all these guys? I don't think so.
I don't think so either, you know. And that's the problem with this new system. I mean, I understand him wanting to be the highest paid player. I understand that. And like you said, he's a good quarterback. He's better than average. His numbers.
I mean, we've talked it or talked or texted. I mean, his passing numbers aren't graded by any stretch. And then, but when you add in the running numbers, you know, it improves it a little bit. But it's this whole. I mean, all these quarterbacks ever since Breeze got his 20. You've got you've got Matt Ryan. You've got even. I mean, Tannehill didn't get 20, but Tannehill got a lot of. I mean, anybody who's a quarterback because it's an important position. Cam Newton got this money. Joe Flacco got a bunch of money. You know, just all these. The quarterback position is so important. Where if you have anybody who's halfway decent, you've got a shot.
Well, like we've said before, you know, there aren't 31 or 32 starting quarterbacks in the league. So again, just to recap Russell Wilson's numbers for 2014: 3,475 passing yards. 63.1% completions, 20 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Now, like you said, Jason, if you add in the rushing, his rushing numbers are 849 rushing yards. So that brings, you know, his total yards from scrimmage up to about, you know, 42.
very solid.
Very solid. And look, low turnover rate, 7 interceptions. I'm not sure what his fumbles were, you know, but 7 interceptions, very, you know, God, if we could get Breeze to just.
Well, with a better offensive line and not Jonathan Goodwin in front of him.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you know, $25 million for Russell and highest paid. Like, I'm sorry, dude, you're just not better than Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
You're just not.
No. Again, I've said it before with other quarterbacks. I'll say it with Russell Wilson. If it wasn't for that defense, Russell Wilson cannot carry that team. He's not Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning went from Indianapolis, who was a Super Bowl contender, and went to Denver, and what was it, his first year or second year? Took him to the Super Bowl.
Second year, I think.
Right, second year, right. First year, they lost in the playoffs, as, of course, is tradition.
Yeah, right.
With Peyton Manning, God bless him.
Right.
But what Russell Wilson can't do that. Russell Wilson isn't going to go to a team and raise their level that high. He's just not. Doesn't mean he's a bad quarterback. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. I'm saying he's not elite.
I mean, he's probably worth about $16, $17 million
sure.
in that range.
Sure. But is he a Rodgers, a Breeze, a Manning, a Brady? No.
Or even Luck.
No, right.
Russell, you know, Andrew Luck's much better than Russell Wilson.
That's my opinion also. So I can't wait what happens. I can't wait to see what happens.
I mean, it's hard for me to think that Seattle would be willing to just let him go.
And not get anything for him, no doubt.
Right. Just, I mean, then they have to start over, hope they hit on a guy, or
right.
maybe, you know, maybe Phillip Rivers is a free agent. Maybe they let Wilson go and bring in Rivers. I mean, who knows? But,
right.
I mean, it's going to be hard. You know, it's hard to get a guy in there that can win.
It is hard to get a winner, and he is a winner from everything that they show. He seems to be a super stand-up guy.
It'll be interesting how play. You know, if they don't sign him before the year, and he's just playing for $2.5 million, and there's animosity there, and they
right,
it couldn't happen to a better team.
Oh, no doubt. And now he did say that he has a an insurance policy.
Insurance
yeah.
policy. Okay.
All right. And he said, look, and he did, but you have to say this. He said, when I pick up a football, I go 100% every time.
Right.
You have to say it, but I think like right. you said in texting, how many times, well, I'm going to run that. You know what? I'm not running that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, I'll just go out of bounds.
Right. Right. Yeah. I go out of bounds here.
If he goes into the season with no new deal, he's one massive hit away from losing $60, $70 million at
right.
least.
Right. So. But again, again, the scenarios are maybe next year they franchise him, see if they can work out a long-term deal. If they don't, they can try a trade and see if they can get anything for him. Because, again, that's what the Patriots are very good at. They'll get rid of someone a couple years early and get compensation for them. But if Seattle just lets them walk for nothing, I think they will be crucified, and then God forbid, what I kind of hope for is he takes them to the cleaners, and then the that defense starts falling around.
Has to fall, right.
Right.
Yeah, they
right.
can't pay everybody.
They can't pay everybody, and then, yeah, fuck Seattle. Fuck Seattle, fuck Seattle. It's just a team I fucking hate. It's just a team I fucking
well,
hate.
Not only a team, a fan base you hate.
A fan,
all,
right.
All the 12 bullshit.
Well, and I hate their coach, who is a cheater. Left USC in horrible shape and got Scott Free, went to the NFL, and got away.
Yeah,
Scott Free.
Yeah, USC took the penalties. He got off and
right.
with nothing.
And like you said, that fan base, here is a team that has sucked its entire, since 1978 or 76, whatever it is. And I know we sucked from 67 to.
Right. I mean, we do have a lot of people that
right.
kind of hopped on.
Sure, I understand the bandwagon. Don't get me wrong. But to sit, I don't know, to sit there and I hate San Francisco, but to try to compare yourself to a San Francisco or Pittsburgh or even, God forbid, a Dallas, who has sucked for the last 20 years, though, which is nice. I don't know. Fuck their fan base. And I'm sure we had a lot of, what it probably is, I'm going to sit here and talk about, is probably young kids. Younger fans who don't really understand how bad you were for so long. There's just no humble in Seattle's fan base. Now, fans, maybe you are listening to this and think what I'm saying, some people can say about the Saints. Now, yeah, look, we bust Atlanta's balls, no doubt about it, because they don't have one. But that
right.
was, yes, but that's Atlanta. I don't, we don't do it.
Right, that's our most hated
right.
rival in the history of the franchise.
Right, right. The worst franchise in the NFL, the Atlanta Falcons, no championships since 1966.
Quarterback who shits in his pants.
Quarterback who shits himself. Owner who looks like he needs to be on a cereal box. they have a toilet. They're building a stadium that looks like a toilet. They are inept and incompetent and delusional.
Delusional or dilutional?
They're delusional.
Okay.
They're delusional.
Okay.
What did I say? I say delusional, I say schedule, and I say, what the other one from?
Therapist?
No, I think the rapist. No. I also say sabotage.
Okay.
Sabotage.
Okay.
Okay, I do that in honor of Captain Kirk, William Shatner.
Okay.
If you listen to him, he says sabotage.
Okay.
So I pick it up for just to be an asshole.
All right. Well, yeah, it'll be fun to see. Hopefully this Wilson issue divides the team and they struggle this year. It'd be nice to see. I'm sick of the 12s.
I am sick of the 12s, too.
I want them to have a losing season.
Yes. And
they deserve it.
They deserve it. The fans deserve it, and the coach deserves it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, our other headlines, so to speak. Again, not really much out there this week, but the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame had their 2015 induction.
Did Aaron Brooks make it?
Nope, thank you.
He probably, you know, he probably will one day.
Right after.
But, you know, so anyway, you know, a handful of people made it, but the big names that stick out, there were a few. Avery Johnson made it. Of course, winning a title with the Spurs. Happy that we didn't hire him. I know there were rumors for a little bit, but common sense took over. And
I like the story of Avery Johnson. If we'd have hired him, you know what I mean? Local boy and all that. You know, I like that aspect of it. But as far as being the best coaching candidate out there, he wasn't it.
Very successful career for him. He's coached in a couple places. Now he's coaching Alabama. Just hired. So that's when he inductees. And, you know, close to the Saints organization, was got the game ball, the night of the game in 06, the Falcons game?
Yep.
So he's in there. Another football player, Louisiana Tigh, is old Jake DeLome. Former Saints backup, Carolina quarterback, took him to the Super Bowl. And then just got the thing and just completely fell apart.
Right. Well, he had several good years with Carolina.
Oh no, I agree. He did. He definitely, like I said, took him to the Super Bowl. He had some very good years with them. And of course, there was the controversy here with the Saints when
right.
Brooks was hurt and Hazlitt. You know, all the fans were clamoring for DeLome, myself included. You know, Brooks is hurt. Don't play a hurt guy. At least
put
in the guy that has the best chance. And of course, he stuck with Brooks. We didn't make the playoffs, and then DeLome, you know, signed away by Carolina.
Right. And one of the things that I remember that situation very well, I can remember being in the stadium and people, they said they clapped when Brooks went down or something, and then that I don't people might have. But but again, it wasn't because of Brooks. They're happy he was hurt. And I've said this for the last, you know, my God, it's been probably 12, 13 years ago. It was because Hazlitt refused to put in the healthy quarterback. You know, people were clapping because Hazlitt's hand was being forced, not because they were happy that Brooks had to come out. Because he did get put in at the end of one game. And Hazlitt later on said that, well, at the time, Hazlitt said, Aaron Brooks gives us the best chance to win, nothing's wrong with him, blah, blah, blah. Then one day after the season ended, Aaron Brooks announces he has to have surgery.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and then after it all was said and done, Hazlitt came back and said that, yes, he knew Brooks was hurt but could play. He just didn't want to cause a quarterback controversy. I can understand, I guess, but
I mean,
we needed one victory to get into the playoffs.
Right, that's it, just one.
Out of the last three games, one.
And DeLome definitely would have given us the best chance to win.
And again, another thing about, you know, there's a lot of speculation on why people didn't like Aaron Brooks, and I don't want to go into that now. But it's not what everybody likes to speculate. Or at least between Brooks and DeLome, people would have loved for DeLome to start and play, the same reason that we loved Bobby Hebert, because he was a local boy. At least local, being from the South Louisiana.
Yeah, from the state, right.
The same reason that we love Deuce so much. And Deuce was a great player. I mean, that helps, don't get me wrong. But Deuce being a South
Gulf Coast.
Gulf Coast guy, right. Thank you. You know, right, Gulf Coast. So we felt the connection. An SEC guy, the beer man, again, put up great numbers, Pro Bowl, NFL records, a great story, but a local. And I think all fans enjoy seeing that local boy get up there. Tracy Porter from Port Allen.
Devery from LSU.
Devery from LSU, but I'm, you know, the West Bank.
Oh, yeah, Keenan.
Keenan Lewis. Love seeing the, you know, I think as a real fan, a fan who follows the team, someone, I think we all love to see local people represented on that team. It makes us feel even more connected to our team. Because not even is it our team, but those are our neighbors and our, you know, down there playing. So, I mean, that was the whole controversy with Brooks. Anyway, I kind of got off topic. But I think that's why a lot of people wanted Jake Delhomme to start. A, because he was healthy, you know, that helps. And B, he was a local boy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Drew Brees is the greatest of all time. Now, Eli has won two Super Bowls, you know, so I mean, I would take that. But I would be ecstatic, we all know this, if Eli would have been our quarterback and taken us to the Super Bowl. I just think it makes a hell of a story.
Well, sure, yeah, that's definitely what
especially
it is.
Eli. Boy who grew up in New Orleans, boy whose dad played for the Saints. And then if he could have won, that would have just been, you know, you make a movie about that one.
So, but, and then the last inductee we'll talk about, Kevin Faulk. Kevin Faulk, great player, was at LSU when I was up there. Those were some fun fucking games when LSU started to have their resurgence under DiNardo. Had Faulk, Rondale Mealy from Destrehan, you know, Faulk from Karen Crow. And then went on and played 10 years in the NFL for the Patriots. Got, you know, all those Super Bowl rings with the Pats.
Yep, workhorse. He was
really
workhorse.
Successful, jack-of-all-trades kind of back. Pretty amazing because, I mean, he wasn't the biggest, he wasn't the fastest, but, man, he was shifty. I mean, that's the best part about LSU. He was made so many guys miss. He was so great watching at LSU and then just very solid career with the Pats, and it's cool that you know he got those Super Bowl rings too. You know, played for a winning organization. Very cool to see him play for as long as he did.
Solid player, hard worker, lunch pail kind of guy. No controversy.
I mean, you know, came on.
Say about it.
But I mean, you know, came on as a you know very young and as very early in his LSU career. Came on and was a stud for several years. I mean, he was a lot of fun to watch up there. I'll say that.
No,
being able to get to watch him for all 3 years, you know, at least three of the years he was there.
Right. When the DiNardo year, that was the late 90s, 97.
Like 90, 95 through like 99. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was, I think his first year was the year before I went there. So I was up at LSU for the second year and Faulk,
right.
You know, Faulk was there and I think Mealy showed up either that year or the next year.
Right. No, but like you said, that was a fun time for LSU, that DiNardo.
Yeah, I mean, that. You know, that game, yeah, I mean, it was a good time. Great, you know, great player, great sports figure in Louisiana history, for sure. So, speaking of great sports figures and events, let's move on to the Pelican Plunge.
The game.
Yeah.
Playing to survive. Aiming to win any way they can.
Yeah, pass the ball, final casting call. First of all, verbal basketball. Off the glass, smash your jaw. Too fast for y'all. You might take a nasty
when you said great sports figures, I thought you were going to talk about Anna Kournikova, but okay.
Ooh, yeah, what that?
We can do what you want to do.
So, yeah, NBA free agency started at 11 o'clock last night. A lot of, you know, a little, I mean, confidence, but... You know, little creepers in the back of our mind that Davis would maybe wait, not sign his extension right away, kind of put us on edge. But Davis signs his extension in the first minute that he was available to. A picture of him and Dell and his parents and his agent. A restaurant in L.A., 5 years, up to like $144 million, I think.
Somewhere I've seen numbers, 145, you know. From.
But it's going to be, when it takes effect next year, it's going to be the richest contract in NBA history. And for a guy that's only 22, the reason they were able to do that is because, A, it's going to be the first year under the new TV deal. So his max level contract is based on what the current, you know, whatever that year's salary is,
projected
salary cap's going to be. So because it bumps up, he gets the benefit, whereas if he would have been a draft of the year before, like guys like Jimmy Butler and and Kawhi Leonard, they could only sign 5 years at $90 million. So they were only the max they could sign for is 5 years, $90 million. Davis gets 5 years and $145 million. Now he does get a little bump for something called the Rolls Rule, which is for younger players. If you get voted into an All Star game and make an All NBA team, you qualify for a bump up to 25% of your team's cap, or if you do that 2 years in a row, which is probably likely to happen to Davis next year, you can get up to the 30% Rolls Rule, which means your max salary is 30% of your team's cap. So that's why it's up as high, even higher, you know, on top of the normal TV salary bump, because Davis is so good.
That's just an incredible 30% of the cap. I mean, that's...
It's pretty wild. Like his contract's going to start at like $29 million a year, and it's all guaranteed. It's not like NFL where, you know, it's all paper money and
right.
Nope, 143 he is going to get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what he's going to walk home with. Uncle Sam.
Right. Obviously, excluding taxes, but
right. Well, right. Agents and taxes will take about 50% of it. But I mean, I wish I had 50% of that.
Right.
You know,
10. Give me 10.
Right. Exactly. But it's nice.
You don't have to, you know, there's no worry. And I think, you know, a lot of the fans were burned by Chris Paul. I think that's why there was a lot of apprehension because he left.
Well, but Jason, you said something that I forgot. You said Paul did sign his first extension.
He signed it, but he signed it where it gave him an out after 3 years.
Right. Okay.
Like he signed one of those short ones that LeBron and Carmelo did.
Right. Now, AD's is a 5 year that's voidable after 4.
Right. He has. So, he'll have the option in year 5.
Right.
Without it,
you know. And like, look, and I think I've said it here on the show. I think I said it to you, but I'll reiterate it with Chris Paul, because you're right. I was very hurt by Chris Paul, but you look at when he left. The Hornets were owned by the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, a completely bad run organization.
They were still playing in the Alario Center.
Yeah.
A subpar, and you know, these are, like you said, these are guys making $15 million a year.
Right, playing in substandard. Especially facilities. Especially when you talk to all your friends in the league, saying, oh no, we have this.
Right. And you're playing so it was a bad situation. God bless George Chin. He
didn't have the money to run
an
NBA team. Like the NBA. And a lot of these guys, they have other businesses that make the money, whereas Shin, all he had was the Hornets. And you're barely squeaking by,
here's the difference. And last week you and I had a discussion, or a couple of weeks ago, about, you know, Benson's wealth and all that. And what I was telling you, you talking about him pulling out his pocket to do this, that. And again, Benson doesn't pull out of his pocket to pay for a player.
Only for when Gale needs to suck his dick.
This is side two. If you want to play the record from the beginning, please turn over. Do not play this side if you want side one. This is side two.
But that's Tom Benson makes money on his teams. We don't expect him not to. But George Shin just didn't have the money to be an NBA owner. If anybody doesn't know how he even got the team, he had bought, if you read his biography, he bought like a Delgado. He bought schools, and he bought a bunch of them. He had like 6 or 7 or 10 of them, and he sold them for $35 million back in the late 80s. And he took all of that money and put it into the Hornets.
The expansion.
Right, and the expansion team Hornets, which $35 million, you know. And he just... That was it. That was his income. Again, if the Saints don't make it, the difference, I guess I'm trying to say, Tom Benson doesn't have to pull a dime from the Pelicans to sail his yacht, pay for his house or anything. He doesn't have to pull a dime from either the Saints or Pelicans. You know, he has the car dealerships. He has banks. He has real estate. That's what you call diversified.
and
poor Mr. Shin just didn't have the money, or and God bless him. Look, I mean, Tom Benson is a great – he really is a great businessman, you know, like him or not, but he really is. Yeah. So my whole point was why I did a Chris Paul leaf. So you look at Chris Paul under those circumstances in that era. I hated that he left, but I understand why. I don't hold a grudge against him. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we have Anthony Davis, who, in my opinion, is going to be much greater than Chris Paul at the end of his career.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Now, not that Chris Paul isn't a great player.
No, Chris Paul's a Hall of Fame player for sure.
Right.
No doubt.
Right. But AD is going to he's going to win us multiple championships in New Orleans. You know,
and that's the best part. He's going to be here at least for another 5 years through 2020.
Right. At least another 5 years. And if we win a championship.
If we win a championship, then yeah, that's.
Then he's going to be here 5 years after that.
Right.
Okay. Because in 5 years from now, if the Hornets, the Pelicans are still a so-so team and also ran a barely making a team, I don't blame him for leaving then.
Right. He gave us. You know, he gave us all the time and chances in the world to get a contender. You're right. If we can't do it, then
right.
I don't fault him at all.
Right. At the end of the day, it'll be 8 years that he would have been here by the time if he can opt out. And after 8 years, if you're not getting the man a championship, I don't like it. But I'm not going to bad my.
I'm not
going to
kill the guy, right? Right.
You know. And again, for those of you out there who have a bad taste in your mouth for the way Chris Paul left, like I just said. Stop and think about it. Think about the situation he was in, the organization was in.
And the fact that very soon Davis will be the best player in the league.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down. And that's look, as good as Chris was, you know, he was in the top five, top ten
right.
in the league. He wasn't the best.
Right, right. I mean, he was never going to be the best. I mean, he's great. He's great. Love him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love him. But AD is just insane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean it's great too because now this becomes a place where he is locked in here for the foreseeable future, which means look, this year in free agency we didn't have a lot of room to play with. They re-signed Ajinta today, which you know it's a little more money than I thought if he was going to stick around that they paid him. But when you figure the cap bump starting next year, you know it's really not bad at all. But really, next year is the year that they're going to have. You know, Eric Gordon's contract comes off the books. Anderson's comes off the books.
Wow.
I mean, I'd like to keep Anderson, but they're going to have a lot of money to play with. They're going to be able to bring in another superstar to play with Davis because no one – look, Davis is here for 5 years. Come hit your wagon to him. You're going
right.
to have a chance to win a title.
Exactly. That was also the point I was going to make. Not only did they lock him up
– Did you think about jumping in front of a train or something?
Can you hear that? No, I'm off.
Yeah, I heard the train. The whole audience heard the train.
Well, it's stopped now. That's what I hear in my house. But, and you know where I live. I don't live anywhere close to the train track.
Right, yeah. That's crazy.
Oh, there it goes.
That was the Pelicans bandwagon. Y'all better hop on right now.
That's the AD train, baby. You hear it?
Y'all better hop on.
Hop on that Anthony Davis train. That's what we're telling all free agents next year.
Speaking of merchandise at the Pelican shop in the arena is 50% off everything but jerseys through Saturday.
Oh, really?
Now, granted, this probably won't be published until maybe Friday
right.
night or Saturday.
Right. So y'all are probably late, but I know about it, and I might go do
yeah,
it.
Look, I'm going tomorrow to get some stuff.
Okay,
so
that's pretty nice.
So it is gonna, you know, it's a lot of fears relieved and pressure relieved that he's here. That was the key. You know, obviously the biggest move we were gonna make this offseason is. Making sure he signs it. So,
but again, there was no guarantee that he'd have signed this year.
No, I mean, yeah, he could have held. You know, he would have been a restricted free agent next year. He could have played it like that if he wanted to.
Right.
But you know, getting $140 million before taxes, but getting that really helps. Like,
right.
like now, like he's secure for money the rest of his life.
But also, I guess the difference between the NBA and the NFL. Look, that's his max contract he can get. Nobody can give him that much money. Am I correct?
No, yeah, I mean no, you're right. That's it.
Right.
We
so
were the only ones that could have given him the years and the value. Yeah.
Right. So that's what helps in the NBA. If you can say, look, the money thing you, for a player like Anthony Davis, there's no fussing or fighting. This is the most I can give you. You know, and the Pelicans offered it to him. But the good thing I think it says, in my mind, apparently he isn't that broken up about the loss
of Monty.
Of Monty.
No, it definitely shows that he is on board with Gentry in the direction that we're going.
That's what it shows me. That's what I like, is that he's on board
with the direction of the franchise.
Right.
Considering he signed that fast.
Right.
I mean, it goes to show you what kind of job Gentry did, you know, massaging any fears he had and, you know, getting in his ear early and pitching him on what's the plan, what's going, so.
And look, Jason, I have to give you credit. I'll say you convinced me, you know, we were talking a couple weeks ago about Gentry and the defense he brought in, and just seeing a different kind of offense run by the Pelicans. That's going to be so nice next year.
Well, I'll say two things. First, Davis posted a picture today on his Twitter feed. He was working out. He's at the Nike basketball camp in Los Angeles. He posted a picture of him working out with Ehrman, the defensive guy. They were already working together already.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know things. I don't know about the NBA as much. I mean, is that unusual?
I mean, usually when the season's over, I would guess. I mean, look, some young guys, cream of some young guy, are gonna, you know, really work on their craft. Some are gonna enjoy the off season a little bit first. You know, especially all these guys that are free agents, they're whining and dining with these other teams. You know, not working out, but that's been a big difference, and why a lot of people have been drawn to Davis, because he is a hard worker. He wants to be the best. He really wants to be the best player in the league, and he is putting in the effort to get better. I mean, every offseason he's worked on something to improve his game. And his free throw shooting has gone up. He still doesn't really have a great low post move, but you can tell he's worked on a few things, and now he's working with Ehrman already. It just goes to show you what kind of guy that we're very fortunate to have.
You know what? I think it's – remember all the controversy there was with – who was the superstar here before Chris Paul?
Byron Davis.
Remember when they brought in Byron Scott?
Mm-hmm.
And Byron Davis wanted to work with his own trainer.
Yeah, he wanted to work out in Los Angeles.
Right. And, you know, the team wouldn't let him and da-da-da. And there was all kind of controversy and, you know, bad feelings going on between the two. So it's so nice having Davis, a young player, and an organization that I believe now is a little better run.
And has much better facilities.
Oh, I mean, poof. You kidding
right.
me?
Right.
Yeah. Look, y'all can – any of our fans who haven't seen the Pelican facilities, just Google tour New Orleans Pelicans facilities, and there's some great websites that come up, even on the Pelicans own website. And people raved and reviewed, you know, raved about it, saying that it is one of the top facilities in the NBA.
Yeah, in the whole league. Yep, 100%. So it's definitely a nice change of where we were just 6 years ago.
To be first class, you have to act like first class, if that makes any sense. And this organization now, again, I can't keep saying it enough, is in so much better of a shape than we were, than they were 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Again, I mean, just having a freaking owner. I mean, that helps.
Right.
Just having someone own the team.
Just having an owner, having a rich owner especially helps.
Right. So I'm happy about AD's.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see what this team looks like in the offense, because looks like they're gonna pretty much run back a lot of the same guys. Osick's still out there. They're negotiating. I know a lot of people don't like him, but they're not really making any huge move now. A, because they don't have the space, but also B, because next year is the year where they're gonna have all this cap room and where you're gonna really lure your second superstar to come here to play with.
Right.
Play with.
So not only next year, not only do we get rid of some burdensome contracts, but the salary cap bumps up also.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So we're going to be some rich bitches.
Look, we'll be able to sign a guy at a max deal.
Right.
So, and I mean, we'll see who else we, you know, we'll have Drew and Tyreek both on expirings. Maybe we toss Tyreek in a trade. You know, bring back Anderson. I mean, we'll just have to see how this year and this offense plays out with these guys. I mean, that's, we really don't know what we we're going to see, other than we know Davis is going to be great.
Right.
But we don't know what we're going to see with this new offense. It should be a lot more exciting, but I'm anxious to see how all the pieces fit together now.
Well, remember how, and I'll do a football analogy because we are kind of a football show. But
kind
Saints,
of.
Right, or at least from a Saints analogy. Remember every time that we change GMs or a new coaching staff comes in, you know, you get these gym players. Like when Mueller came in, we got Joe Horn because they knew about Joe Horn because they played in the same, you know, division. So he was more up to date on that. So my point with the new coach, I'm sure he has players around the league that he just keeps his eye on. I'm sure there's I don't know who, but, you know, I'm sure there's a player that he goes, man, I like, you know, I like
player.
This guy
would
fit great in my system. Man, if I could get him, man, I could do this, this, and this, because this fits in my system.
Well, absolutely.
So, like you were just saying, you know, how this team's going to take a turn personnel-wise is going to be interesting, very, very interesting to watch. Very fun. And
yeah,
I can't wait to see him get on the court.
Yeah, me neither. I cannot wait.
Yeah, so I can't wait for the season to start. Now, look, the NBA isn't like the NFL. It's only 3 months away.
Yeah, right.
Don't have a lot of time to.
I mean, look, they're gonna have training camp in October.
Right.
You got 3 months.
Right, 3 months and it's here. So.
Yeah. So, but very obviously a positive step. The franchise is pointing in the right direction.
Exactly, and they have been since 2012 when Mr. Benson bought them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when they got Davis in the lottery.
Right. Benson bought him. He got Davis. Everything has been up from there. Even Monty, like we see, you know, his first couple of years with Davis, they were growing pains. Like Jason has said many times, you know, injuries kept the whole team from playing together a lot of those years. But you saw last year that the Pelicans have the talent to make the playoffs, that they do have the talent to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So,
and they should only get better.
Right.
I mean, they shouldn't get any worse.
Right. So I predict next year we win the Super Bowl and the NBA championship, and we're
first time in history.
Right.
No championships, same bill.
Now that would be so awesome.
How awesome would that be? Man, I think I just came.
No, I hear you, man. That would be so much fun.
Yeah. All right, and then we'll move with that. We'll move into our final segment of the night. Since there's no Saints news, and I've really just, and like I've mentioned it on the last show and before, like I'm really getting the bug now. You know, I was able to put it aside.
You know, there's
for a
cream
while.
For that.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it on. I refuse to watch NFL Network unless it's a Saints program, so I can't. I'm not searching that way, but I've put in the 09 DVD. Like I'm trying to find anything Saints related. I even went and looked up some stuff from the 06 season, and it just got me to think it'd be a good idea, this segment, to look back.
The Saints coming back. Tom Benson, where you at? Baby boy, the prince. Katrina couldn't stop us, New Orleans. Hey, number one Saint fans.
This is the way we live. Orleans Saints, number one on the field. Katrina couldn't stop us, and that's real. Beating these teams is no big deal, big deal, big. This is the way we live. New Orleans Saints, number one on the field. Katrina couldn't stop us, and that's real. Beating these teams is no big deal, big deal, big. This is the way we live.
I say, who that said it gon' beat them Saints? You can't do that then. You can't beat them Saints. We got players like Reggie Bush and Deuce Mack. Offensive line, just push them to the back.
And reminisce on that 2006 season, the first season of this era, now that we're coming up on year 10 of the Peyton Breeze era, of this renaissance, this gold, this the best period in Saints football history. Where, I mean, if you think about it, other than going into that first year where we were excited, we didn't really know what we had, but ever since then, it's been at least playoffs or bust, and then some years it's been Super Bowl or bust.
It's not so much that we didn't know what we had in 2006. We were so excited because we still had them in 2006. I mean, it's just that simple. people forget there was a great chance, you know, especially you young kids who, you know, probably are 15 or something, might not remember Katrina that well. There was a great chance, at least we all believed it, that the Saints were leaving after Katrina.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I can still remember we were playing the Baltimore Ravens in a preseason game for 2005.
I remember because I was at the game.
I remember
being, and I don't usually go to preseason games, I remember being at that game.
Yep.
Beforehand.
Well, not only...
Just remember, like, the last time I saw, like, the old, those old dark tan tiles that used to line everything. You know, really, like, the old 70s-looking Superdome.
Right. Well, right. And that's another aspect of this whole thing that was wonderful. But I can remember sitting in that, in my seats, and by that time, we knew the storm was coming. Or, that, you know, the storm was a beast. He was a beast, and there was a good chance he was coming our way. That was a Friday night. You know, then by Saturday, everybody was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, Saturday I picked up all my electronics, lifted them off the floor, and then I went out to Laplace on Saturday. I left the house.
Right. So, so I can remember, of course, the greatest thing. I mean, we started the season with 3 away games. Can you remember those games?
Well, I remember the first one they actually won. It was crazy that they won the first game. I think.
Oh,
it was
against Carolina. Okay, all right.
Yeah, the Carolina.
We're talking.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. All right. So we're still in the 2005 season.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But 2005. I remember starting on the road and winning, but then it all quickly just
right.
It all quickly fell. The games in Tiger Stadium. I went to the first one and just couldn't. I just couldn't go to the like. It was such
really.
It was so much work.
It was
to get up there for a game.
It was. I went to every game in
we
Tiger
went to
Stadium.
The first one when they played the Dolphins and Nick Saban.
Right, Nick Saban came back, and God, we wanted to beat Nick Saban as some sort of fucking, and not even close.
So like right, like there are like 30,000 people in Tiger Stadium.
Right. No. The first game there was like 6.
Oh yeah. The first game there was a lot.
First game was a lot. And then the piss poor. Then after the first game in Tiger Stadium, the piss poor play by the team. Then rumors started coming out of Benson playing footsie with the mayor of San Antonio.
Because look, we had 4 of the games were in San Antonio that year.
Right. But I made every game at LSU again after the first game. There was only 30,000 people. It was the easiest football game I've ever been to in Tiger Stadium.
Yo, yeah, right.
I put it that way, okay?
Yeah.
It was the easiest football game. I parked the closest I've ever parked. I parked on campus somewhere. And
it took you 2 hours to get home.
No. I was in and out. That's what he said. But,
yeah.
Right, so that season was terrible. So now, what you brought up, and we kind of got
right,
cracked
right. So,
with the 2006 season.
Right, yeah, the change coming in, Peyton coming in, Breeze coming in, just the hype around Reggie Bush. I mean, that really kind of spurned a lot of it.
Exactly. Look, I can remember it must have been it was a Thursday night that we learned that Houston was not going to take Reggie Bush, that they had worked out a deal.
Mario Williams.
Right. Kevin Amaker, Birdseed, texted me that.
You jerky little nutball.
you know. And I just remember thinking, holy mackerel, we're going to get Reggie Bush. I mean, it's like, you know. And look, I remember, come on. Before that, I wanted to, look, hindsight is 2020.
Right.
I wanted the quarterback from USC.
Matt Leinart.
Because I figured we couldn't get Bush, and I wanted Matt Leinart. He was going to be the future.
Man.
I think you can see Matt Leinart at the car wash down the street there every Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 3:30. So if y'all want to go see Matt Leinart, that's where he's at, washing cars.
Or even Vince Young, who's out of football right now.
Right. Now, you might be able to see him in county lockup. I'm not sure exactly where Vince Young is. I don't even think he's washing cars. But those two nudniks, could you imagine?
Oh, man.
The Saints might not be here now.
Yeah, I don't even think Peyton could have done his magic with
No, those two morons,
those
no.
Two, yeah.
I'll tell you what, we definitely wouldn't have 10 straight years of sellouts.
Oh, no.
10 straight years. Again, folks, remember, I mean, man, you're right. It's been a decade. It's been decade.
And I remember when they unveiled the 2006 band. I mean, that was the first year in our history that we ever sold out the full season.
Right, right. Not many teams do that. You only have a handful. And in places a lot bigger than New Orleans.
Especially in New Orleans post-storm where a lot of people weren't here anymore.
Right. People weren't here. People had extra expenses related to the storm. But it just showed, in my opinion, it showed what the team meant. Because we thought we were going to lose them, and then like everybody used to say back then, you remember, man, we were, you know, we just wanted anything normal in our life back then. Remember?
Oh, God, yeah.
That's why if you were a business and you opened, people flocked to you.
They'd get some places open up in Kenner or Metairie or somewhere, you know, outside. It's
right.
Like, holy shit, now we have that now. All
right. Right, everybody goes to it. Oh, we're so happy you're back, you know.
Yeah.
Big fans, you forget. So you're right. We signed Breeze. I wasn't thrilled with it at the time. Okay, look,
I was okay with it, but we didn't realize what we were going to get.
Right, right. Because
Reggie Bush was the number one attraction.
Right, and remember, in 2006, folks, Drew Brees wasn't Drew Brees, okay? He had played 5 years with San Diego, 4 or 5 years. He sucked so bad the first 2 years, they got him Phillip Rivers. Then he had a spectacular year. And then 2 pedestrian years. And then on the top of all that, his shoulder was...
Right, yeah, then he tore his labrum.
Garbage.
Yeah.
So he wasn't the Drew Brees that we know and love today, who's the best quarterback in the NFL.
It was a pretty big gamble, and a gamble Peyton felt he had to make. I mean, we gave him $60 million with a bum shoulder, not knowing if he was ever going to even be a competent thrower again.
Right. Yeah, didn't know what, but apparently I think what Peyton saw in him was just his drive and his smarts, and I think that's what Peyton wanted, and that's why he didn't go with those two nudniks coming out of college. Those two guys are morons.
Yeah, thank God.
So we have the draft, we get Reggie, we sell out season tickets. I have to say one thing here, okay? Again, had season tickets from 1989, okay? 1989, ain't missed a game. 2000, I start going with a friend of mine. I don't make him pay. I buy both tickets. 2001, I say, hey, look, man, you're a single male. You know what? You can pay for your half the ticket. So I give my ticket to my friend, my best friend. He's in charge of paying them. 2006 season comes along. Set in the same place so long. You know, we're hearing about everything sold out, everything's wonderful, everything sold out. My friend doesn't make the payment.
Ooh.
By the due date. He calls me. He goes to make a payment. They tell him, no, look, sir, we gave your tickets away.
Oh, gee.
So now he has to call me.
Oh, my God.
And I later learned from his secretary that he wasn't too keen on calling me.
Well, no shit. I wouldn't be either.
He was a little nervous. This we were talking about Doug, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago. That's who we're talking about. So he calls me and says, "Man, I missed the date." Now, mind you, if you remember, we never took any money back. We had paid for the 2005 season. We took the Saints games in Tiger Stadium, and then. But the game played in San Antonio and New York. We never got that money. We kept it with the team.
Mm-hmm.
He still gave away the ticket. You know, man, I was hot. So I said, all right, man. I hung up. I called the organization. I called it. And I started raising hell. I started raising hell at him. I mean, you know, you kept my money for a year, you know, blah, 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 blah. And remember, at that time, they said the Dome was sold out. That's what the news were reporting. But luckily, the lady was, or gentleman, I forget who it was able to keep me in the same section. Actually, I think my tickets are a little better in a couple of ways. I'm a little bit higher. I'm in the club section in the middle. I'm on the about the 20, 25-yard line. And the people we are around now are, if you're a season ticket holder, you know, and Jason, you know this, how the people around you become, you talk to them during the games, and you become a fan, and you become friends. And we just really have a great group around us and more contemporary our age, and it worked out well.
Wow.
But I was crapping my pants, I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah, I would be too. I mean, I was so... You know, the excitement going into that season, you know, starting all the preseason games were on the road. I think one of the games was at Shreveport,
Mississippi.
And then you start off with the two games on the road at Cleveland and at Green Bay, which, you know, they went on the road and won the first two games of the season. You're like, oh, all right. You know, your interest was like, you know, your pants, you know, your chub kind of moved up a little bit just to see what was going on. Like, oh, okay. And then just the excitement around that Falcons game and, I remember working, you know, just so mad that my bosses didn't just say, all right, you work until 12 and everybody off. Like, they didn't tell us shit until around, like, 2 o'clock, 2:30, which at that point I had already left. I'm like, I just can't. I'm sitting here. We're on 1340 Poitras, so we're right there by the dome all day just hearing stuff going outside down on the street. I'm just sitting there in my office just like, I can't take it. I can't sit up here and not be a part of all that, not experience all that. So I think I left at about 1 o'clock and just said, I can't take it anymore. So I went down. Some of us were tailgating under, you know, like on the other side of Claiborne under the overpasses. I remember having a camera. I took a bunch of pictures. Still have them. And just being so, so ready, so excited. Just couldn't believe that we were finally going to be back. I just could not wait to get back in the dome. I mean, I know they did the countdown early and then let people in. Like, I mean, we were in the dome maybe an hour and a half before the game, I think.
Yeah, at least.
I just remember, I just wanted to get inside.
That's what he said, right.
I just wanted to get inside the building. I just wanted to get back in my seat, just to be back. Just
exactly.
Just even when I sat there, I was like, holy shit, like I'm back in the dome again. It was just wild.
It was. It was unbelievable because, like you just said, man, you're right. For a long time, I never thought I would sit back in the dome again. There was talk about the team leaving. There was talk about tearing the dome down. So to be in that Superdome with the undefeated 2-0 team, it was just magical. I remember Doug and I went early. We went 8 somewhere in the quarter. I forget where. So I'm not going to – maybe Brennan or something. I don't remember. But walking down Poitras to the dome, you could hear, just like you said, you could just hear the fan base, everybody, hoot ass everywhere you went, people going wild. And also, they did a special thing, and when we walked up and saw it underneath Gate A, the players were pulling up their cars, and they were walking in right there, you know, kind of like a little red carpet type deal. And that was just amazing. And we could hear the fans cheering, again, 4 or 5 blocks away as we're walking up Poitras. So we get there. We get to Gate C. That's the like you were talking about, the very famous, I'm sure y'all have seen it on TV, where they're doing the countdown clock. Mm-hmm. And they dropped that banner.
Yeah, dropped the banner. Yeah, our team, our home.
Right. You know, I mean, I'm sitting there watching that. I met up with my brother who got me into watching football and has been a football fan since the Saints were, you know, before they were a franchise. And just standing there, watch him drop. And again, like you said, just, oh, my God, I'm going back to the Superdome. This is a place that I've been at least 8 times a year, actually at least 10 times a year, because I do go to the preseason games, you know, for 16, 17 years at that point. And it was just magnificent. Monday night, with that always brings an extra level
Monday
of excitement.
Monday night against the Falcons.
Against the Falcons, who were a much better team at the time.
Oh, yeah. I think they were 2-0 at the time. You know,
they
also,
were.
Just like
they
us.
Were undefeated at the time. Had a much better – they had a quarterback that, you know, Michael Vick. They were supposed to just whoop us, but like anything Atlanta's supposed to do, even then they'll manage to screw it up.
Yeah, they don't, and just, you know, sitting there before the game, and then, you know, they bring out U2 and Green Day, and that was fucking awesome and fun. Just revving up the excitement. And then, you know, the crowd just going nuts. I mean, everything going on. I'm just so excited, standing up the whole time. And then three plays into the game, you get Gleason's block.
The block.
Scott gets a good hop, tries to scoop it with one hand, and can't make the play.
So much for the notion that Michael Vick would run wild starting with the first play.
Michael Kanin, who has made a headline for missing 6 of his 8 field goal attempts this year, is now back to just punting and kicking off. The former St. Morton Anderson is here for most field goals. Look out! Right through! A kick block by Steve Gleason! It is scooped and scored by Curtis DeLoach! Touchdown, New Orleans!
Just again, and just definitely the loudest I've ever heard the Dome.
Well, not just that. It's, you know, Jason, you couldn't have scripted that any better. If it was a movie, they wouldn't have written that because that's too outlandish. Too outlandish. The team that won 3 games a year before coming back, you know, going to beat their heated rival in their first game back home. And you're going to get one of the most spectacular plays in the NFL, a block punt, not just a block punt, but a block punt return for a touchdown.
By a guy named Curtis DeLoach. Pretty, just amazing. I mean, just the excitement of that whole season, just the... just having it back was one thing, but then having it back and then us being good too.
Right. That would get too much to ask.
You know, I mean, I remember that Philly game early in the regular season where, you know, Philly was coming off all their with Donovan McNabb and all that
their
title game appearances. I mean, that was a big measuring stick for this.
Exactly.
We might have been 4-1, 5-1 at the time. They had a good record.
Right. To me, 2009, I think we all believe it was late in the season. Our victory against the Patriots were our proving ground game. But you're 100% right. That Philly game in 2006, that's when we were legit. We legitimized this coach, these players.
Yeah. It was a pretty, fairly close game, too. And, oh, man.
Well, like I said earlier, I'm surprised when I go back and look at the scores and see how close these games really were. Because in my mind, I believe that we beat everybody by 40 points and we were partying by halftime.
I mean, really, the only, offhand, I know the only big game I can remember like that, which happened to be one that I went to, was that game in Dallas. I mean, that was another.
Oh, that was that year. Oh,
right.
That
was another big measuring stick game. It had gotten flexed to Sunday night. Adam and I flew over to Dallas because that's where Courtney was living at the time. And we went to the game, partied, that was kind of when I was in my big Red Bull and vodka kick. So we drank a lot of Red Bull and vodka before the game. You know, get there, starts off slow. You know, Julius Jones runs for that 70-yard touchdown at the beginning of the game. But then, we just poured on.
Right.
And to do it in Dallas, their stadium with their fans.
How were their fans? I've never been, and that was not the new.
They got
AT&T World. That
that was the old dump. They got pretty mad because we just started pouring on. Of course, like we're hammered, we're standing up, clapping, cheering, doing what we would normally do in a game, but just standing up, clapping, and cheering, and fans are yelling at us from behind to sit down and stop blocking their view and shit. And I'm like, dude, I'm just happy that we're beating the fuck out of y'all right now.
Right.
And I've told stories. We looked over in the section, and there was a Saints fan and a Dallas fan sitting next to each other. And every time the Saints would score, the Dallas fan would pull out his wallet, they got some cash, give it to the Saints fan. And it got so bad, eventually they had to leave so your boy could go to the ATM and get more money out.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's funny. I wonder what bet they had.
I mean, and of course, you know, like we were so hammered, I mean, and we were killing them, and we were getting a little arrogant and cocky, and even outside, I remember after the game walking around, that was the first year we got our W shirts, and I was just walking around, you know, holding up my shirt, just yelling W to any Cowboys fan that I could talk to. I wanted their whole Cowboy fan base to hear that we beat them that night.
Right. Folks, everything I said about the Seattle Seahawks earlier today, just ignore all that, okay?
Right.
Because apparently Jason is that guy.
Well, I mean, look, I'll say that, you know, there were several reasons for it. First of all, like, I was on Red Bull and vodka all night. We got to the stadium. We drank a ton of beer.
Right.
It was the Dallas fan base. So,
right.
They deserved it. And also, it was the first road game that I had ever been to.
Right.
So it's just a whole different because you're the minority, it's kind of like you against the world a little bit. Probably. I'd never experienced that before. You know, I just wanted them to know that we came in and kicked your ass, fucking
right.
Cowboys.
Right. That's probably not a good idea being.
But
that's
the only time I've ever been really obnoxious, you know, on the road. Even when we went in the Miami game in 09, yeah, we had fun, but I wasn't mean spirited. You know,
well, half the time we were getting our ass kicked. I mean, half the game we were getting.
In the second half, and after the game too, you know. But that was one of the best games that I've ever been through. That Dallas game.
No, that would be very exciting. Again, I'm always so hesitant to go. Now, look, I think we talked about it, all three of us. I think this year would be a great time to go to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an easy trip. We can drive. I don't have to fly.
Yes, Thanksgiving, yeah.
Right, you know, I don't have to fly. That I will. I'm definitely into.
I agree.
But
we definitely need to get on that.
Right. But okay, so, right. The Dallas game, you're right, that was definitely, that was the stamp on the double stamp
mm-hmm.
to show that was a legitimate team.
Right, like we're winning the division. We're going to the, you know, we're going to likely go to the playoffs.
Also, there was a side story, you know, Sean Payton is the pupil. He beats the master. It's like Darth Vader beating Obi-Wan Kenobi in A New Hope. That got a lot of traction.
Yeah. So then, of course, you have the playoff game against the Eagles. And, you know, that was fun. I remember taking my parents' van out to that lot across from Sewell, brought a generator, you know, out there all day, cooked some food. Our first big tailgate that we really kind of did ourselves and kind of went like all out. I mean, I remember that was when like Dick in a Box had just come out. So Blaine and Mike at Fuck the Falcons, we had made some Saints cardboard boxes and then we're walking around with the Dick in the Box.
Oh, that's funny.
That was kind of funny.
And inappropriate.
Well, of course. And then, you know, having that game and then having Deuce of all guys.
Exactly.
You know, win the game for us.
That's what I wanted to talk about for the game. I remember the game, obviously, very well. And just first time ever we had had the bye in week one. We were division winners, so we had that bye. So we're playing in the divisional round. All we have to do is win to get to the championship
round.
Title
game, right? It's crazy.
Right. I mean, insane. And you're right. I can just remember we need this first down, and they just kept handing it to Deuce. You know, we're running out of the clock. And Deuce is just picking up first down, 2 yards, second down, 3 yards, third down, 5 yards, boom, first down, you know, and that last, I think it was the last touchdown he scored, we all remember it's iconic, seems like everyone in the Philadelphia defense has a piece of him and stopping him, Deuce is just turning his legs, getting help from the offensive line and just moving the pile, the Saints are just literally manhandling the Philadelphia Eagles at that point, literally just enforcing their own will, imposing their own will, and just pushing them off the line, pushing them, getting 3, 4, 5 tough yards at a time. It was just incredible. And of course, to end that game, that was our first NFC championship.
Mm-hmm.
The furthest we have ever gone.
Ever got? I got a bunch of pictures from that game, so I always like to go back and watch them. And another thing too, you remember one of the first plays of the game was when we threw that screen to Reggie and he got popped.
Oh yes.
pop big time. You're like, holy shit, he might not be back.
He might be dead. Right.
I mean, right. Right. It's like, I think he might be dead.
Right. No, you're right. I forget about it. You're right. That is the hardest hit. That's one of the top three hardest hits I've ever seen in the Superdome.
Ever.
You're right.
Ever. You're like, holy shit.
Was that Jeremiah Trotter who hit him?
I don't. It would make. Is Trotter still playing? I mean, I couldn't. I don't know.
No, but sure. I remember right. I mean, you're right. I'd forgotten about it until you brought it up.
I remember that. And the whole, you know, everybody in the dome was just like,
right.
Oh, man. I mean, he really looked like he might die. But, you know, didn't die, came back and win. And then we had the Bears game. I had a big party at my house. We made different types of pizza to celebrate the game. It was in Chicago. We had a Cajun pizza, deep dish pizza. And then we had the redneck pizza, which was a tortilla, beef jerky, and easy cheese. Our redneck pizza. Right. I think somebody took a bite of one. Apparently, it was terrible.
Right. You had a party at your house. I had a party at the country club, and Jeff had a party in his mouth, and everybody came.
Oh God. But you know, being a close game, and then when Reggie, you know, gets that 80-yard pass, and you're just like, holy shit, we had the lead in the NFC title game.
Yes.
Oh.
And all look, let me be critical of Reggie. That when he turned around, I don't know if that changed the game, but it sure didn't help. When he turned around.
And yeah, when he turned around and pointed.
Antagonizing.
Yeah.
And then he did the flip. Again, I don't know that fired up Chicago's team. I'm sure that they, you know, but that really made me mad. That play, him, or the way he acted made me mad. Again, I don't know if that had anything to do with Chicago turning it around or not, but they definitely did after that.
Right, and completely, yeah, completely.
Right, whooped our butt from there on.
I mean, after that, you're so excited. You're like, "That's coming!" And then the Bears just throttled us the rest of the way,
right.
And it was very depressing. It took a while, definitely took a while to get over losing. You know, when you're that close, especially when you're that close for the first time,
sure.
And you can just taste the Super Bowl.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's right there. It's right there.
One more win.
Yeah, but just overall, what a great. See, you know, so many fun memories I had from that season. I look back very fondly on those pre-Super Bowl years. Even 7 and 8, I know we didn't really win, but just the excitement was back, the feeling that we were contenders now. We actually had a really good team for the first time in a long time.
Right. We were really legitimate. Look, the Saints, you know, Jim Moore is one of my favorite coaches, A, because he was the coach. He was the first coach to get us on our feet and start winning consistently. He had some of the best teams in the NFL during those years, I honestly believe. It's right when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old, when he's the first football I remember, you know, the 85 season or 86 season when he first took over. And you know, he was football to me for so long, you know, because I was so young. And, you know, when you're young, you don't have anything to compare anything to. And then you had Ditka that was just a dick in the box.
Think we'd call that a Ditka box.
Right. You know, then you had Hazlitt, who I've already explained, I like Jim Hazlitt. I liked his interviews. I liked Hazlitt as a person. But he was a mediocre coach with a mediocre team. That team, we all know now, looking back 15, you know, years later, that he had no control over that team, over locker room.
Definitely not. Definitely
they weren't
not.
Disciplined. And even with all that, he was still able to keep that team on the cusp of being really good,
right,
you know.
There.
Goodness forbid if another, you know, like a disciplinarian would have come in and been able to. Who knows how good that team might have been. Aaron Brooks, the most physically gifted quarterback we've ever had play for us. But I don't think he could have run a Sean Payton system.
Oh, no, I don't. Payton would have taken one look at him and be like,
Well, actually, he did.
Well, yeah, good point.
He actually did say, oh, goodbye.
You're right. That's right. No, thanks for stopping by.
Right.
And they did the same with Joe Horn, you know?
Yeah, look, you're right. I mean, I know, because I remember being, I mean, I really thought, I know Horn was hurt late in the season. I really thought he was going to be back for that Bears game. I really did. Like, I figured, because there were some thoughts that he was going to be back for the Philly game. And when that didn't happen, I'm like, oh, well, they're saving him for the Bears.
Right,
they're definitely saving for the Bears. And then when he didn't play, I was like, that's, you know, that's interesting.
Right.
And then, yeah, he was gone after that season. I mean, Peyton wasn't going to deal with.
No. Was it that season or the 08 season?
Oh, no. I mean, we got rid of Horn after 06.
After
06?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe it was.
I mean, it kind of spurred on, you know, the drafting of Meacham.
Right, right.
You know, traded Horn, and I think we had. Maybe we signed David Patton, maybe?
I thought Patton was in 06. I thought we had him already. I thought he was to bring veteran leadership to us. But one of the things I remember about Joe Horn is this was after the last – this must have been after the Philly – this must have been after the Philly game or maybe one of the regular season games, because I distinctly remember driving in my car, driving home, listening to WWL, and they were talking about his contract. And he wanted to renegotiate to get the salary bumped up. And Joe Horn did that every 2-3 years. They would renegotiate with him to give him a signing bonus. You know, that's how it worked back then.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And he was very critical that if they don't give me a, you know, I will not take a pay cut. Da, da, da. And anyway, I remember that. And then when the Saints... Not only did they not give him a signing bonus, they let him go.
They just let him go to Atlanta.
Right. He felt, you know, he came on and said he can't believe the organization did it and blah, 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 blah. But he was definitely – Joe Horn definitely played a huge part in his not being on the team with Sean Payton. And God bless him. If you look back, know what we know now, he was too good of friends with Kenny Wilkerson. Joe Horn was a lot of Kenny Wilkerson, if y'all remember the old.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know the old WWL announcer. Horn was a lot of Wilkerson's story. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So.
Yeah, you got rid of Horn, and then WWL fired Wilkerson.
Right. You know, because we all know that Sean Payton doesn't put up with media BS.
Right. Right.
And it's such a shame. You look back at that. I know we're talking about 06, and we're kind of going all over the place. But we're talking, you know. But
I mean, but, you know, this still happened, and
right.
Because he was there for that 06 season.
Right. Right. He was there for the 06 season. Right. 07, he played in Atlanta. But it's such a shame under that Hallett regime, they had such talent. Joe Horn is easily, in my opinion, I think. Well, Marcus Colt.
Yeah, you got to put. But I mean, Horn's the second best receiver in the franchise history,
you know,
right?
As far as athleticism and everything, and which one?
Oh,
I would take at their peak, I would take Joe Horn.
Yeah, if you would have poured, you know, Horn in his prime that he had with Brooks, if you put that with Breeze instead, yeah, who knows what kind of numbers he has?
Right. No. Exactly. And he was dynamic, and like you said, he was a playmaker. You know,
he's a guy you could always rely on.
Right. He was. He had a mouth. Doesn't fit in with the Sean Payton squad, but Joe Horn, yeah, I believe he's physically gifted and all that in his prime, the best Saints wide receiver. And we've had several, you know, Eric Martin was just an animal, you know, as far as catching everything thrown at him, you know. Now he's an animal. He eats everything around him. If you see him, the man is like me and Doug hugging. It's just, you know, Doug and I are big boys. You know, I mean, some, you know, Eric Martin needs football. You know how the linemen lately have been losing weight?
Yeah, he's going the other. He's taking all their weight.
He is taking their weight for them. You know.
All right. Well, I know we've gotten a little off track, but yeah. But basically, the whole point I want to talk about the 06 season and kind of reminisce is that now we're entering year 10. Of this regime, this era. It's just crazy to think, you know, like it doesn't seem that long ago that, you know, we were three and a half, and then we were recovering and we had the 06 season, and now we're coming up on 10 years later.
Right.
And we've still got Peyton, still got Breeze, been a competitive team this entire time. And it's interesting to see where they, I mean, obviously you've only got, what, Breeze, Streif, and Evans? Are those the only three players left?
And Colson.
Oh, yeah, and Colston. So you got three draft picks and Breeze.
All right.
The only four players that are left from that team.
That's incredible, right? Oh. You know, and not just from that team, but you know,
I mean,
the team.
Yeah, I mean, even the Super Bowl team, there's not a lot of guys
right.
left.
Right, but the team even now kind of reinventing itself with C.J. Stiller, who I think is going to be fantastic.
Stiller, yeah.
I'm so excited about him. So excited
yeah.
about him. He's oh, excited. You know, Cooks.
Yeah.
Unger, Pete, the defense, Jarius Bird, who we didn't get to see last year, really shine. And so we're going to be in for a treat this year, I believe. I just can't. Can we start tomorrow? I mean, can we
I know,
get
right?
this shit started?
I know, right? What do we? I think we have, 28, 29 days till camp?
Yeah, camp starts on 26th, 27th. We're on the 1st of July today, so yeah. Yeah, 25, 26 days, and finally something, you know.
I mean, look, we just need football news. You know, we just need to get through 4 weeks, and then that's it. The season's basically here. Even though it's just training camp, I mean, it's better than nothing. You're going to get Saints news
football.
Every single day. Right.
And then we get preseason, which, again, but it's something. It's something.
Yeah, it's getting to watch Saints players and pads play against another team.
Right. Oh, I'm excited. You're right. The bug is. And look, I've told y'all this before. Man, if I've watched 30 minutes of the NFL Network since the season, I watched a lot. And that's all I used to keep my TV on. Again, it was mainly just for background noise while I did something else. But, yeah, I have not been on the NFL Network again 30 minutes in the last 6 months.
What? 30 more minutes than me. I've not.
Not at all. Not anything.
I mean, if I catch like a Saints yearbook or something, I'll put it on.
Right.
But other than that, I'm not going to stop. So.
No, and exactly. That's how I am now. Also, you know. Now, once the season starts and you know starts,
right,
I will.
Right.
I'll watch a little bit more when they have something relevant to say.
Yeah. Until then, I guess that's all the show we have for you tonight. Make sure to tell your friends about the Dome Patrol podcast. You can check us out on Twitter. Dome Patrol PCast. You can go to Facebook, Dome Patrol Podcast. I know you can find us on iTunes, the old-fashioned way, Dome Patrol Podcast.com. Say bye-bye, donkeys.
Good night, Who Dat Naked.
Bye-bye, Dead Dome Patrol.